You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's time for the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill. Local sports, national sports. The GCAT is on it.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Now, saddle up for a tall glass of sports talk. Here's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
800-998-1003 is the way to chime into the conversation. It is the Rudiman Can Hotline. Got a lot to get into. Hour two, brought to you by Chris's Pavings. Locally owned, New Orleans and Bayou region. You're paving it. It's Chris's Pavings. Pelicans getting another win last night against Brooklyn. Take your phone calls here as well. Jim Eichenhofer is going to join us at 1:15 to touch on that and let you know why that's significant, win number 42. We'll talk about it here as well. But I want to hear from you. It was nice seeing West Bank Creek yesterday over at Evangeline Lounge. Going to be over at Wrong Iron. Another Pelicans official watch party coming up on Friday, and that will be the second half of a back-to-back as they will take on the Miami Heat. Tomorrow, they will take on the Orlando Magic. Speaking of, tomorrow we'll be over at Katie's. Looking forward to seeing the chef and hearing John 4K complain about something. Even on a day like today, I'm sure he'll complain about something. And then he and I will take turns making chef's life miserable. That's what we do. What we enjoy on Thursday.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's hump day.
Hump day! I know you can hear me. Let's get stupid.
Today's more than what the camera Wednesday hump day is.
Indeed. Denver Broncos head coach Sean Payton looking for quarterback, perhaps. Mel Kiper didn't get a chance to get to it yesterday, as he has the Broncos going for a quarterback. I mean, I just keep hearing four of the first six could be quarterbacks. Six quarterbacks could be going. Absolutely gorgeous out here. We're in the Party Shack. Where's the Party Shack? Well, if you remember back in the day, the Zephyrs. And where were they again? Windsor? No, that's Wichita. Windsor. Oh, the baby cakes. Poor Tim Grubbs. I saw Tim Grubbs. He's going to join us later this week as the Major League Baseball season is off and running. The World, God, I think, what is it called? The Seoul Series in Seoul, Korea? Padres and Dodgers have been over there for a little bit. They're getting the season going overseas. These games do count, and the cheating Dodgers came back somehow and won. They were down 2-1, something like the seventh or eighth inning or something. I don't know. Then I brought my kid back. I brought him to school. Then the Graf texts me, bahaha, 162-0, referring to his Dodgers. So somehow, some ways, cheating Dodgers win the first game of the season, and it is what it is. So, but that season is off and running. The rest of Major League Baseball does begin, I think, next weekend, right? Let me see. Yep, next weekend is when it will get going. So 1 week until the regular season gets going, but the season has began and did start with the Dodgers and the Padres off and running. So we'll touch on that here as well. And we'll see Tim Grubbs, at least not physically. We'll give him a call, but got a chance to see him over the weekend. It was nice. Hadn't seen him in a little bit. We'll touch on some other things as well with the Pels and, of course, the Saints. And as I mentioned, that mock draft that Mel Kiper has out, his latest one. This is the post-free agency mock draft. And again, one of the things that we touched on to start the show, if you missed it, I'll bring it up again just because I do think it's kind of important. As Ralph Marmorow said, it could have been reported a certain way. Adam Schefter yesterday, 1 year, $13 million. And then he said, oh, by the way, he's having a neck procedure. And everyone went, what? If you were a Saints fan. But today, Jonathan Jones over on X said it's a 1 year $13 million contract that includes $7.99 million in per game roster bonuses, The base is 2.7, signing bonus 1.86, workout bonus 450,000, pregame roster bonuses totaling 7.99. So you add all that together, I guess that's how you get to the 13 million. It's essentially pay for play, right? So if he's healthy and he plays, he can get and earn the full contract. And he's on the field and he does well. If you don't, he doesn't get paid. So maybe that does help a little bit when it comes to how you feel about how that contract is, the procedure, and things of that nature. Played a little bit earlier. However, what he had to say about the defense, playing with Cam Jordan, in case you missed it, again, this was a couple days ago. He said this.
Like that. Yeah, man, that's definitely something big for me that I'm excited to do. Future Hall of Famer, a guy who I'm gonna spend time with, who I can just absorb the game from. I'm definitely excited about Big Cam. So
there you go. That's his thoughts. Obviously, he's tweeted, a bunch of other Saints players on the defense have tweeted, and they're happy about all that coming as well. So we'll keep an eye on that, see if there's other signings or not. One of the things that I did want to get to yesterday when that new mock draft did come and I didn't get a chance to was Mel Kiper referencing, I'm going to love this, I'm going to give this over to you-know-who, where he sees, perhaps, in particular, quarterback. So, right now, still Caleb Williams going one. Still the case, right?
I think Jaden makes it interesting because I think he closed in on Caleb. I mean, he made that a tougher decision at number one. People say, well, it's Drake or Jaden. I think it's Jaden or Caleb. Jaden put pressure on Caleb because Caleb struggled from that Notre Dame game on a little bit where Jaden didn't.
All right. So, he was also asked a follow-up, though. Why do you like Jaden Daniels so much?
He can throw it. He can throw it accurately. He can throw it anywhere on the field. He can run it. He Nick Saban and that defensive talent at Alabama and the defensive guru that Nick is couldn't stop Jaden Daniels over the last 2 years. So, for Jaden, he nailed the process. He did everything right. He's got his weight up a little bit. He's always going to be thin and the splendid splinter. But the bottom line is, for Washington, with the talent level improving and the NFC, where they're not as loaded with great quarterbacks as the AFC is, I think this is a perfect fit.
Look, what Dan Quinn's done there as well, I know for LSU fans, you want to see him succeed, and so much of success as a young quarterback, it's being in the right situation, right system, right coach, players around you that can sort of help. I keep going back to, what C.J. Stroud in Houston did, and look, that's not the norm. They did it perfect. You can't do it much better than what they did last year. Change the culture. Change the perception. Went to the playoffs. Run a playoff game. Like, that doesn't happen normally. Peyton Manning didn't happen. Led the league in interceptions his rookie year. Normally, when you go to the number one team, you stink. Now, the Bears have gone and tried to make some moves and try to prepare that team as best they can for Caleb Williams. Way better than they did with Justin Fields. But that's kind of what I'm getting at when it comes to what Washington could be doing, and that's a completely different situation than New England. Look, I was listening to a national show earlier today, and this host flat out said, like, that guy may not last the season, which I don't see how Jared Mayo doesn't last the season, but still, I mean, that's kind of where they are there. You've seen reports where it's not exactly like free agents are jumping for joy to try to go play with the Patriots anymore. Maybe like it used to when they had Tom Brady there and things of that nature. New England is a completely different situation than Washington. Dan Quinn has gone and gotten some players that played in the system, have familiarity with them. Austin Eckler is a nice back that can help a young quarterback. You have some things there. And that seems, as crazy as it sounds, as stable a situation as you can, if that makes any sense, right? And you do have and that offensive coordinator, former college head coach, a former NFL head coach, and Cliff Kingsbury. So it's better
than I think New England. And I do think that would be a solid situation if that takes place. I don't think the Bears go with Jaden. I still think the Bears go with Caleb Williams. I would just be absolutely shocked if that was the case for them to do that. Now, let me go to that mock draft real quick because it is interesting as to how many quarterbacks it goes. Again, this is Mel Kiper from ESPN. He does have Caleb Williams going one to the Chicago Bears. Then he has Caleb Williams going to the Commanders. And he does say, this is where the intrigue begins. Daniels and Drake May. Is it possible J.J. McCarthy? Look, I get you're projecting. I know they won. J.J. McCarthy doesn't, my eyeballs, he doesn't look like Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, his play. Does that make sense? I'm not discounting him. He's a winner. He leads. But is he elite? Does he have to go to a more stable sort of place? I don't know. I never have watched a Michigan football game and say J.J. McCarthy is the top or second best quarterback in college football. Athletic-wise or play-wise and translation, I could be wrong. You guys can let me know on the Rudiman Can hotline. But I just don't. Now, at three, he has Drake May going. So that's three straight quarterbacks. 1, 2, 3 to the Patriots. The Patriots have got to take a quarterback. So whoever is still on the board after 1 and 2, the New England Patriots have to go there. They have to have a quarterback. They traded Mac Jones. They don't have a quarterback. They need a quarterback. At number four, here's an interesting one. Marvin Harrison Jr. to Arizona. Now, I saw a report today that has Marvin Harrison Jr. not participating at the Ohio State Pro Day. Or that he won't. So that's interesting, right? Now that said, he's posting videos of him as recently as 4 hours ago on TikTok, launching a football on one of those football toss machines that you use, like, for punters, and, you know, the guy catching a punt does it, and he releases it and then goes and catches it at the goal line. So, look, he's speedy, he's athletic, but it's just crazy. Now, several reporters saying, hey, he's good enough to skip the combine, and now his pro day, no need to risk injury. Caleb Williams has number one locked, yet is working out today for his teammates. Says a lot, though. Caleb Williams is doing it. I don't know. Would you be concerned? Would you still pick him over Malik Nabers? Like, what? Why would you not work out your pro day? Are you that worried about the injury? I don't know. There's a lot of people say, hey, why would Marvin Harrison need to work out? He can't get drafted any higher than the first receiver in the draft. So it's a calculated decision for him. I just told you, those three teams, they're absolutely going quarterback. So I guess that's why they're saying don't worry about it. Because at five, Mel Kiper has the Chargers going with Malik Nabers from LSU. So Harrison and Nabers go 4 or 5. He has the Giants going with another receiver, Rome Odunze, going there. At 7, Joe Alt, the tackle for Notre Dame. Atlanta, Dallas Turner, the outside linebacker from Bama. At 9, the Bears go Jared Verse, the defensive end from Florida State. Again, this is Mel Kiper's latest mock draft that came out yesterday. The Jets go tight end Brock Bowers. At 11, there he is, J.J. McCarthy, quarterback for Michigan. Here it is, 12. Bo Nix, quarterback for Oregon. So count them. Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy. And you have Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams. That's five quarterbacks before you get to the Saints at 14, before you get to 13. The Raiders, he has going J.C. Latham, offensive tackle from Alabama. And as we go to break, he has the Saints going with Olu Fashanu. offensive tackle from Penn State. So that's what Mel Kiper has through 14, five quarterbacks before the Saints select at 14. If that happens, that plays into the hand for the Saints, because I do think some good tackle, some receiver, you're gonna have people there that you can draft from. Jim Eichenhofer joins us next to talk about the Pels' 42nd win of the season. That is the win total for all of last year for New Orleans. The Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
Attention, Blue Boot Rodeo family. This is Gavin Dugas, LSU baseball champion. Are you ready for...
If on a six-foot goal you could catch that lob from Najee Marshall and look nearly as majestic as Zion Williamson last night in Brooklyn, what do you think?
My answer to that is I could catch the ball. That's the only thing I can promise, is I can catch the ball.
Okay.
I might have to let it go over my head a little bit and then track it down, but eventually I would stop the ball. But as far as being able to catch it in that high in the air, I think you're talking to the wrong guy.
All right. Well, bottom line, it is another win. And I want to kind of focus on that. We're going to talk about Z. We're going to talk about the fast start and all that. But, Jim, you and I focused on it a little bit, even when Will Guillory from The Athletic joined us earlier this morning. It is a big deal. I know you have 14 games left. And I know, obviously, the goal is to get to the playoffs, win the playoff series and all of that. But there are steps, aren't there, Jim? I mean, when we cover and talk about the NBA, when you got to be the Spurs, when you got to be where the Celtics are right now, you have to build that program. And I know it sounds very collegiate, but you are building a program. You have to establish winning, a culture. Your players have to buy in. It's no different than when Saban first got to LSU or whatever and things of that nature. Are you starting to see that with this team? Why is it significant that they got to 42 with 14 games still to play?
Yeah, I mean, to be able to say that you have consecutive winning seasons, I think is a first step in terms of trying to build the consistency and the year in and year out, being able to be a contender or be in the playoffs. I think that's one of the first steps you have to go through before you get to the point where you're talking about championships every year. And to me, it's interesting, too, I think specifically to the Pelicans, if you go back and look at it, and I'm sure everyone who listens to this as a Pelicans fan understands where I'm coming from on this. There's been so many times over the last 10, 15 years where they had a glimmer of hope and they had a season where they looked really good. They made the playoffs, but then they never were able to build on that. So, I mean, it's looking like, obviously, nothing's a lock right now, nothing's guaranteed, but it's looking like this will be the second playoff appearance in the last 3 years, the second straight winning season. I think this franchise is just dying for that kind of repeated success, repeated achievements and accomplishments, because there's just been so many one-offs. There's been so many times where in 2015 they made the playoffs as an eighth seed. They got in, you thought they were going to build on it, and they really didn't. Monty Williams was out as head coach, and then Elvin Gentry came in. And then 2018, very similarly, where you thought, okay, this is the first step. They made the playoffs as a sixth seed. They swept Portland in the first round. But then we didn't know it at the time, but Anthony Davis had a foot out the door in the 2018 offseason, was already thinking about it. So that kind of got completely sidetracked and derailed. But when I look at, two consecutive winning seasons, I look at it in that context of that it's really time for this team to start being a team that year in and year out is successful, gets in the playoffs, and just keeps building forward. I think with the composition of this roster and this team, they're in the best position they've been in forever to actually be able to cash in on that and do that, just based on the young talent that I think is going to keep getting better.
It's interesting you say that, because I bring it up a lot of times, either on the show, even when we do the podcast, the PTSD, and I get it. I mean, you just went through almost a historical, horrific background or timeline of what it was like to be a Pels fan, really, or, Hornets fan here. They're on their third, quote-unquote, franchise player, right? And things haven't gone well, whether it's injuries, whether it's that's all folks, whether that's I pick my spots and CP me and all. So I do get it. I wouldn't even say the hesitancy or maybe perhaps the fear that, things are going to collapse here. So let's do this with me. Let's do this as a project, because, I like to do this on the pod and I do this on my show. I always bring up, when I look at the standings, where teams are in relation to the Pels at 9-10. That is last year's dreaded win or go home. Same thing they did a couple years ago, that they did win against the Clippers, then the Spurs, and then got to take on the Suns. That said, the lead between Golden State, the Lakers, and where New Orleans is, give me a comfort level. 10, I'm very comfy, relaxing. 1, I'm sleepless. That the Pels will be at 9 or 10 seed.
That they'll be better than 9 or 10 seed?
Yeah. Give me the comfort level that there will be a 9 or 10. So, like, are you very comfortable they're not going to be?
Right. Yeah, I would say about a 9. I mean, I think it's pretty much a slam dunk right now that even if you look at the math, that there's just not enough time left in the season for those teams to make up the ground on probably not just the Pelicans, but also some of the teams that are right behind the Pelicans in the standings, including Sacramento and Phoenix. So, yeah, I'm feeling extremely good about that. I'm sleeping very well at night when I look at the standings in terms of the Pelicans being able to avoid the situation of the last 2 years where they were a 9 seed. 2 years ago, they did make the playoffs, and that was fun. It was great. It was a great experience. But you definitely don't want to make a habit of that, of having to try to get in the playoffs that way.
It's a very good point. And that's what I bring up, too. I look at how they've been playing as of late. I know the Lakers 6-4. Look, I mentioned earlier this morning to you, Jared Vanderbilt's out for the season. Two other role players here off the bench. That adds to attrition and depth. Golden State's 5-5 in their last 10. And here's the thing, man. Lakers are 12-20 away. Not every game remaining is going to be over there at L.A. And Golden State, 17 wins at home, 18 wins away. But those teams would have to do things they hadn't done all season while the Pels lost. So that's why I tell people, breathe. Okay, 7 or 8. When you look at Phoenix and Dallas, Phoenix is 8.5 back, Dallas is 8 back, your Pels are 5.5. But Dallas and Phoenix, what do you see with those two teams right now?
Well, I think Dallas has just been really inconsistent in terms of they'll have a stretch of 5-6 games in a row that they win, and you think, okay, things are great now.
Yeah.
And then they backslide and have a bad week. It just seems like they've been going back and forth on a roller coaster for a few weeks. Phoenix, I mean, to me, their defense is killing them right now. They had a game against Milwaukee on Sunday where Giannis didn't play, and they still gave up 140 points to the Bucks. And the other thing, too, to really keep an eye on with Phoenix over the last few weeks of the season is that I'm not sure exactly what it is right now, but it's something like either first or second hardest schedule remaining in the season. In their last 10 games, they play only against teams that are in the top 6 of the West or the East right now. So, I mean, that's a horrible way to kind of close out the regular season. So, I mean, for them to make up the ground that they need to even get into the top 6, let alone catching New Orleans at 5 right now, they'd have to put together a really, really what would be their best stretch of the season. And, you know, you touched on this a little bit with the Lakers and the Warriors, Gus. I think the difference between the Pelicans, especially over the last, say, 2 or 3 months and some of these other teams, is that New Orleans has just been so much more consistent. They've been winning games that you expect them to win. They haven't had really hardly any stretches of multiple losses. They haven't had any losing streaks that have been that troubling. They had one stretch in late January where they lost 3 in a row, but it was to 3 of the best teams in the league with OKC, Boston, and Milwaukee. I mean, they've just been so much more of a sure thing that you can count on than a lot of these other teams, and that's what's really separated them in the standings by the margin that they have right now.
I kind of like to look at certain things in a certain way as well. When teams, Jim, come to the trade deadline, right, they look for an infusion of energy, talent that helps maybe take them to that next level. Here's my pat myself on the back moment, Mr. Eichenhofer. I told you months ago, if Zion could get back to the way he was before that calendar year ended and he got injured in Philadelphia, playing at an MVP caliber level, and if that came in the month of March, and he was going to continue to get better and in better shape, to watch out. And I think we're somewhat seeing it, Jim. And what I mean by that is this. It's almost like the Pelicans made a trade at the deadline, right? They got a guy that can take over a game. They got a guy that can play on defense. They got a guy that excites the crowd. They got a guy that's one of the best players in the league. It's almost like that. While the other teams around you, they didn't. make any of those real big moves. Now, Denver's starting to play more like we know the Nuggets are, but look, the T-Wolves have some injuries and all of these other players and teams around here as well. When I look at the Pels, it's almost like they picked up a guy at the trade deadline, because even where the trade deadline was or the All-Star break, this is a different Zion Williamson, man.
That's an interesting way to put it. I really hadn't thought of it that way, but I like that. I mean, it's like you added the Duke version of Zion Williamson, and coincidentally we're getting to see him do this in March, which I think people loved watching him in college, and unfortunately NBA fans and basketball fans have been pretty much robbed of the ability to watch him at the end of seasons because of injuries. But it's been incredible to watch the way that he's played and the transformation that he's it seems like maybe every few weeks he's added 5% to him getting closer to 100%. And I like the way that Will Guillory talked about it when we had him on the podcast this morning, where he said that, you know, not only is he, you know, achieving the level that we hoped for, he's actually exceeded it with some of the stuff that he's doing. People had gotten to the point where they were like, you know, we know Zion's potential, we know what he could be, but he probably, it's going to be difficult with him being this far into his career and some of the injuries he's had to really get to, like, the dream scenario of what we Zion. But I think he's actually started to show that lately, where he's at that level of all NBA player, and he's doing it on such a consistent basis that it's extremely exciting for not only the rest of this season, but just going forward in the future as well.
And Jim, here's the thing. He worked to get to that space during the season. If he actually continues to do this, does it in the offseason, is going to be like this in this shape at the start of next season, that puts this franchise at a whole different level. And that's the excitement about that. But analytically, I know you like to look at numbers and things of that nature. A lot of attention's B.I., Zion, C.J., but we brought it up today in the pod. Larry Nance, Trey Murphy, double digits in the first half. Jose, what he's been able to do. I saw a stat, I think somebody put up there earlier today, about he's been one of the best defenders that the Pelicans have had. It might have been Christian Clark that wrote something on there. Is the bench going to be a factor in these final 14 games to solidify a top six spot? Do you think they, just alone, can get the Pels a top six spot?
Yes, because I think they've been a huge reason why the Pelicans are in the position that they're in. It's been such a huge advantage on some of these other teams. We've talked about this a little bit here and there over the course of the season, but a lot of the teams, I think Phoenix is the best example of this. A lot of teams in the West loaded up and tried to get as many top-of-the-roster players that they could get. Dallas did the same thing at the trade deadline last year with Kyrie Irving. But the problem with the downside of this is that because of some of the assets that you've traded away and some of the cap space that you don't have now because of the top of the roster guys that are making huge money, your flexibility to add depth is definitely decreased. And when it comes to specifically facing the Pelicans, that's a problem because they have four or five guys off the bench every night that are playing well. And some of these other teams have just been searching for trying to figure out their depth throughout the season. Again, I go back to Phoenix. They traded for Royce O'Neal at the trade deadline this year, but they made a bunch of moves in the offseason that were minimum salary guys, and really virtually almost none of them worked out. And so they've had to try to figure out, okay, well, we thought this guy was going to be our seventh or eighth man. Now he's not in the rotation. What do we do? And so I think for New Orleans, that's been such a steady thing that even on the nights where the starting lineup gets off to a bad start, the backups come in with Jose, Najee, Trey, Larry Nance, and they turn the game around. And then in the games where the starting lineup does play well in the first quarter, they're just adding to the lead, which has been something we've seen constantly lately, where they're up by 20-something points in the first half because both the first unit and the second unit have played really well. So, I mean, it's up to me, it's up there at near the top of the list of reasons why the Pelicans are in fifth place and have been one of the best teams in the West over the last couple months.
All right, easy and last thing for you. Oh, it'll take about 10-15 seconds. I have to choose one. I'd like both. But if I have to choose one, Orlando or Miami, which one do you think the Pels match up better against?
Wow, that's a good question, Gus. I'm going to say Orlando. I mean, partly because it seems like the last few years the Pelicans have struggled against Miami, including in the games that they played against them that turned into a little bit of a scuffle in February. So I'm going to say they match up better with Orlando, but, I mean, they haven't played the Magic yet this year, so I'm really curious to see how they do in these two games over the next couple weeks.
Jim Eichenhoff, as always, appreciate the time, sir. Thank you so much.
No problem, Gus. Thank you.
Yep. See you on Friday, as that'll be the next day for the New Orleans Pelicans podcast. I'm a part of that with Jim Eichenhoff. There'll be the next watch party as well. Wrong Iron. Mrs. K is actually going to make her way out there finally. Hang out there as well. Uh-oh. Albert Breer just tweeted something about Chase Young, senior NFL reporter and strategist, the Monday Morning Quarterback, NBC Boston. You know Albert. I'll tell you what he had to say about Chase when we come back. It's the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
Pick up the phone.
We want you to be on the show.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
All right, so this is what Albert Breer had to say. And again, it's kind of like what along the lines, 800-998-1003, by the way, if you'd like to chime in on the Ruderman Can hotline, 800-998-1003. And then also, as Ralph was saying from the Saints Happy Hour podcast back at 12:15, if it would have been reported like this yesterday or the day before, maybe you feel a little bit differently about it, right? Because Wednesday, you're like, hey, former number two overall pick, some issues with injuries, but he played a full season last year. He was with the 49ers, played in the Super Bowl. Man, why not? Bring him in. Whatever. Sign my money. It works. And then yesterday, oh, Adam Schefter is going to be a neck procedure. The goal is to be ready for the regular season. That's the goal. It's going to go into training camp, though. Hopefully, the regular season, we're ready to go. And it absolutely changes your feeling on it. Right? Immediately. Even though it's not your money. Even though it's, you're sitting there going, really? Did you just pay $13 million guaranteed to a player that is about to have a neck procedure, whatever that is? And then, late last night and into this morning, some clarifications came out. We touched on it earlier in the show. One of the first to do so was Jonathan Jones on Twitter, or X. 1 year, $13 million contract includes $7.99 million in per-game roster bonuses. His base is 2.7. Signing bonus, 1.86. Workout bonus, $450,000. Per-game roster bonus, $7.99 million. What's that mean, Gus? I sent that to John and Chef Scotty. They're like, what was that mean? It's an incentive-based deal. If he's healthy and plays, he gets paid. If he's not healthy, doesn't make the roster, doesn't make the in-game or the per-game stuff, he doesn't. Albert Breer explains it a little bit better. Okay? So he says, some background on Saints defensive end Chase Young's deal. Scans on his neck made it tough to find a suitor. Again, I mentioned, Panthers, Titans, Saints were the only three teams that I saw that he had scheduled visits with. This is the number two overall pick back in the day. No one, Albert says, would clear him on his physical. The condition was initially found after he had a stinger last year versus the Browns in preseason. So he has a neck condition that was found apparently after a stinger. So they do scans, make sure you're okay afterwards. I read that as that wasn't something that happened because of the stinger or a play like that. There was just something that people missed or didn't look for, didn't know existed, or came to be because of playing football. He says, continues, he'll have neck surgery tomorrow. So that's different than a procedure. I thought Matt did a good job yesterday saying a procedure is, you know, getting an injection in your knee or something. Opening your knee to attach a ligament, that's surgery, right? Surgery is cutting, procedures, probably needles, manipulation of muscles and bones and things of that nature. Does that make sense? Rotator cuff surgery. It's not a rotator cuff procedure. I guess you can call it that if you'd like, however you want to use terminology. But Albert Breer is one that I have seen today say he will have neck surgery tomorrow. The idea in doing the 1 year deal with the Saints per Albert, with $5.01 million guaranteed and $7.99 million in per-game rosters was to allow for Young to get locked in with the team, go through the 3 to 5 month rehab from surgery, and have a chance to make the money back. So that was the plan. That was the deal. Hey, let's find somebody. We'll get some money. We're going to do what we got to do. Go get this neck taken care of, get the surgery, get the rehab. And then if we're healthy, I can make some money. So right now, you're on the hook essentially for $5 million. And with the per-game rosters, Albert Breer continues, really this protects the team and the player. It's 100% based on his ability to get cleared to play. The neck condition was a factor too, though. In his trade market back in October, the Bears weren't comfortable with the scans. The Niners were. Again, he had 7.5 sacks, 70-plus pressures with San Francisco, with apparently a neck condition that he had. So it is something, again, of note. It is something to keep an eye on, but it does explain it a little bit better. It's not 13, it's in the bank, can't touch it, he may never play a down for you situation. So that is something to keep an eye on, right? That's kind of what you look at. One of the other things that also stood out was Jameis Winston posting a video of him thanking New Orleans.
And I respected that.
And
I really loved
with
that.
The Saints. So I'll play it. It's about a minute, 50 seconds here. A couple highlights. It's photos of him at training camp taking photos with fans. It just says, at Jabu Wins, if you want to go check it out on Twitter. I'm assuming Instagram here as well. Thank you, Nola, with a heart emoji. Hashtag dream forever. Here's Jameis thanking you, Saints fans. And, of course, when I press play, it doesn't play. All right. We'll get to that as soon as it does happen. But one of the things I love that Ross Jackson does all the time is he lets us know that pretty much everybody but Anthony Davis is still thanking New Orleans, by the way. I don't think it's ever going to happen. This just
I got here, you know, this city, you know, they took me in. And I respected that. I really loved that, and I was embraced by the city, and I love him.
Down air now, Deontay Harris. He's got it. Touchdown. Another for Winston. Touchdown. Johnson.
What for the man of the side?
I got it back.
How was the pain, Jameis?
Yeah, just pain. It was pain everywhere. So we got to keep on pushing through and being resilient.
Launches for Olave. He came down with it, and it's rolled a touchdown for Smith.
Lofty on Jimmy Graham. Back shot. Here is it, Graham. Winston will load up and throw it down the middle of the field.
And Jameis Winston, that's what they brought him in for. He had a live arm.
Guess what? We finished strong in Nola, baby. We took over in the zone. Who that? Who that? Who that baby gonna do some things?
Nola. The Superdome is the birthplace of my first NFL win. So saying farewell, I don't know where to begin. I'll start with expressing gratitude and thanks to all of Who Dat Nation, the Saints organization, and especially Ms. B. I am grateful for all my teammates, coaches, trainers, the entire Saints support staff, and honestly, the whole city. I am grateful for the festivals, Mardi Gras, Second Line, great music, world-class shows, and witnessing the Nola Clippers shine. I'm grateful for the love, encouragement, perseverance, and real people to embrace this little light of mine. I love you, New Orleans, through and through. Trust and believe that y'all haven't seen the last of Jay Booth.
Well, that, from that guy. So hard to not only not root for him, but you can see why this city, I mean, I'm telling you, and then you add the touchdown for everyone. It's going to be the most infamous play he's ever done, honestly. I mean, again, I'm not saying things won't change, but I don't know how many people are going to think or say that the fan base doesn't love Jameis Winston a little bit more than Derek Carr right now. I mean, there's no way. That's awesome to hear, man. And people that live in the city have come across him and see it. That's legit. That's real. The kid goes, he goes outside and throws the football with kids in his neighborhood. It's awesome to have. I wish him the best. I really honestly do. I wish him luck and success, man. I mean, that guy, he tried, and he cares. And again, he called a touchdown play against the Falcons. Will live in infamy forever. I will always love him for that. Do it. Rub it in. Oh, that's beautiful. I still love seeing that. Poor little Arthur Smith. By the way, you're going to get fired before you land. Yep, I went there. Especially since they'll be division champs next year. Anyway, when we come back, Jeff Boggs of ESPN Bets will join us next. Don't go anywhere. It's a Sports Hangover in ESPN New Orleans. Spoke with Corey Brown, JP, one of the Nola Gold players. We'll have GM Ryan Fitzgerald on coming up shortly. Absolutely gorgeous day. Jeff Boggs should be jealous of me, man. I'm hanging out over in the party shack. You can hear the lawnmower in the background. Was there cutting the pitch, as they call it. Nice and almost looks like a green in golf. It's just awesome out here, man. Got to enjoy the days before the muggies get back, sir.
One day you'll have to invite me out there.
You're always welcome. I'm telling you, man. Come out and have a good time. The first four games, they're off and running. Yesterday, two began, two more today. What are your thoughts of watching yesterday? All I know is I looked at... yesterday, just obviously after the Pels game and got home and looked at it, apparently they want to fire the Virginia coach, even though he's won a national championship in the past. The offense is boring. I just saw gif after gif after gif of how bad it was. And then I looked at the game. They scored 42 points in the loss to Colorado State. They lose 67-42. Did you get a chance to look at that and see that battle for a 10 seed?
Yeah, I didn't watch either of the games, but yesterday we talked about the idea that a lot of people thought Virginia had no business being there, and
yeah,
all the people I were looking at loved Colorado in that game, and again, or Colorado State, to be clear, because Colorado is playing tonight. But, so it wasn't a big surprise to me, but it definitely had all the folks who didn't think Virginia belonged in that tournament in the first place certainly confirmed those thoughts.
I think one of the things, too, that you look at is the battle for the 16 seeds, Wagner and Howard. It's great, like, when you hear the coach from Wagner, he's like, man, this is something that they're going to remember and things of that nature. And I get who, they're going to play North Carolina. So, I mean, I understand that. But, hey, you get to play North Carolina. That's why I've always said college basketball in the tournament to me. That's why I love it. I'm happier now that the college football playoff expanded a bit because at least it's hard. You have to win your conference. You have to win the conference tournament. You have to do those things, but there's a pathway to at least play for it, you know? Are they going to win five, six games?
That's why I take New
Are they going to win five or six games, Jeff, and, you know, win and cut down the nets? Probably not. But, hey, they get to go play North Carolina on an NCAA tournament, you know, court, man. I just think that's great for them.
Yeah, and I can say from personal experience, I was part of the Nicholls State broadcast team in 1998 that won the Southland Conference, and then we went to Sacramento, and, yeah, we got the defending national champs, Arizona, at the time. We didn't pack for the whole weekend, let's put it that way, but we were doggone happy to be there, as was every kid on that roster.
Yeah, no doubt. And you got two more games coming up here as well today. So let's take a look at those two more play-in games, and one includes Grambling, the Tigers from right here, Louisiana, taking on Montana State. That is the first game on True TV, 5:40 p.m. How do you see this one, sir?
Well, you know, obviously they've got to be energized, Grambling State. It's their first appearance in the Big Ten, or Big Dance, excuse me. Again, the Tigers at 20-14 enter tonight's game, having won 9 of their last 10 games, including a 75-66 win over Texas Southern in the SWAC tournament final. Montana State, 23-11, though, looking to earn their first NCAA tournament win in program history, even though it's a play-in, maybe a little asterisk there, but still. Montana State, Grambling spread, Bobcats favored by 4.5. The over-under, 134.5, and the money line, Bobcats, -210, Tigers, +180. couple of things to think about. Montana State ranked 32nd in the country in three-point field goal percentage at nearly 37%. Tigers, though, ranked second in the SWAC in scoring defense, 69 points per game. And a couple of reasons why Montana State can cover. They've been excellent at forcing turnovers all season, led by a Big Sky Defensive Player of the Year, Robert Ford III. Bobcats have 280 steals this season. Some of the things to look at for Grambling State, why they might be able to cover, maybe not win, but cover. Grambling has played excellent defense all year, as we kind of referenced with the other stat. Tigers allow just 69 points per game, ranked second among SWAC teams. And again, many reasons to look at either of these two teams. A lot of excitement, I'm sure, for Grambling State. You hope that doesn't affect their play. But again, just 4.5 points. Let's see what Grambling can do tonight.
All right, let's do it. At the end of that game, the next game, we'll get ready to go over in Dayton as well. All these games over there are Dayton. This is a battle for 10 seed again. Colorado and Boise State. I'm so used to seeing those two teams and thinking football, you know?
No doubt about it. A couple of 10 seeds set to battle it out. The winner of this game gets number 7 Florida in the first round on Friday. Buffs closed out the season strong. They won 8 straight games before losing to Oregon in the Pac-12 tournament championship game. The Broncos finished in a tie for second place in the regular season in the Mountain West, but were upset by New Mexico in the conference tournament quarterfinal. Colorado 16-17-1, Boise State 17-12-1. Colorado actually favored in this game, minus 3.5, 143.5 the over-under. The money line, Colorado minus 165, Boise State plus 140. A couple of things to think about. Colorado's KG Simpson leads the Buffs in scoring at 19.6 points a game. Broncos, they rank 18th in the country in strength of schedule. And again, why Colorado might be able to cover based on pure talent alone. Buffs should be seeded higher than they are. Tad Boyle has a pair of future NBA players on his roster. Talking about KJ Simpson again, and also forward Cody Williams. Boise State, Broncos enter ranked 26th in the country in NET after playing the 18th most difficult schedule. Again, Boise State, 4 players averaging 12.5 points or better a game. So again, that's one reason you may want to lean toward Boise State. They can score.
All right, sir, let's get on over to the NBA. We love to scoreboard watch. We love to look at some teams that we'd like to win. Kings at the Raptors. I wish Toronto could win that one. Grizzlies at the Warriors. 76ers at the Suns. Can Philly give us a little more breathing room over there? Clippers and Trailblazers. You know the Pels are only a half game behind the Clippers, sir. So we're going to be keeping an eye on all of that. Which of those games on the NBA slate do you want to touch on?
Yeah, and I'm looking at 2 Western Conference teams here. Golden State, they're looking for their first home victory since March 6th when they faced Memphis. Memphis just 23-46. Golden State, better than that, but certainly not what you expect from them, 35-32. Golden State wrapped up that 3-game road trip with a win over the Lakers, but then came home and lost to New York on Monday night. Memphis, they're on a 3-game losing streak. They've lost 5 of its last 6, including that last one, 121-111 in overtime against Sacramento on the road. Warriors, minus 10.5 favored, but the money line's moving away from them. They were at 11 earlier in this line. And then 219.5 is the over-under. Warriors, minus 600. Grizzlies, plus 425. Couple of reasons why you might like the Warriors. Golden State has won 2 of its last 3 games on its road trip, beating the Spurs and Lakers after losing 3 of its previous 4 games. Power forward Jonathan Kuminga had 22 points, 5 boards against San Antonio. Curry, he had 31 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, shooting 12 of 14 from the floor. And taking a look at a couple of things why the Grizzlies might be able to cover. They won most of the recent meetings between these two teams. Warriors haven't been a real profitable team to bet on in this head-to-head series. Grizzlies covered the spread at 11.5 points as underdogs at Sacramento on Monday. So, again, a couple of reasons to be considering either team. But, again, the Warriors, 10.5-point favorites.
Well, let's see if the Pels can get some help tonight, sir. If I want to get some help on how to spend some of Carver's college hard-earned money on ESPN bet, how can I do that?
Well, hopefully add to your wealth total at ESPN bet. Download the app. It's live in Louisiana. Has been now for almost 2 months. Once again, we encourage you to find out all about the special features, your favorite ESPN personalities and shows. When you do sign up, new users, you get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. You're going to find all your favorite markets, again, in-game wagering, cross-sport, parlays, teasers, all the props you can handle. And as we begin in earnest the NCAA tournament tomorrow, think about the parlay opportunities. ESPN Bet, download it today. Make sure you got it for the big dance. What a play. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Remember, it's in partnership with LeBurge Lake Charles. Terms and conditions apply. Check out the app for details. And, again, let's get ready. We're going to be in the midst of college basketball this time tomorrow.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's one of those weeks and weekends, Jeff, where don't go anywhere, really, because nothing's going to get done. People are going to have doctor's appointments, long lunches, and no one's returning any phone calls because everyone's going to be keeping an eye on it. I really honestly did see a bunch of articles, Jeff, about it's like one of the most unproductive work weeks in the American economy when the NCAA tournament gets going. Right, exactly. All right, thank you, Jeff. We'll talk tomorrow, bud.
Absolutely.
All right, hour two is in the books. It was brought to you by Chris's Pavings. Go check them out. Anything, asphalt, driveways, the works. If you're paving it, it's Chris's Pavings. We'll be back. Hour three next on ESPN New Orleans.